You're listening to the Business of Biodiversity podcast, proudly brought to you by the New South Wales Government's Saving Our Species program. I'm your host, Edgar Greste. Traditionally, business has always been about providing a product or service to customers and making a profit along the way. But in the current climate of environmentally conscious consumers, these days business leaders are faced with the additional challenge of maintaining a sustainable and environmentally friendly practice. Whilst many businesses are well along their conservation journey, others have yet to begin. It can be hard to know how to take your first step towards incorporating biodiversity-friendly practices in your business. Today, we've got our environmental reporter, Katie, here to talk more about the story. Katie, unpack what we're going to talk about in this episode.
Yeah, so in this episode, we'll be looking at how one organization is actually helping businesses to embark on their conservation journey and starting with greening their supply chains. It's not an easy task, and so it's great to have help and support along the way. Businesses need to look at how to integrate ethical and environmentally responsible practices that start from the beginning of raw material sourcing to manufacturing and all the way to the end of life or the waste of the product.
And key to all this is obviously transparency to make this whole thing work, but also ways for businesses to measure and track the sustainability of their supply chains. And there are a bunch of initiatives globally, things like the Science-Based Targets Network, and there's another, the Task Force for Nature-Related Financial Disclosures. Now, that's a real mouthful, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. We're going to learn more about that in just a bit. I spoke with Amy Croucher from Sustainability Advantage about these initiatives. So she is the Nature Positive lead there.
I've been involved with sustainability for about 10 years across a range of areas like renewable energy, circular economy, and now with a big focus on nature. I've always had a pretty holistic view of sustainability and understanding that these areas are really, really connected. And I guess now being so focused on nature, my work is really exciting because it's kind of bringing me back to the fundamental reason why it's so important to work in sustainability. Like, our planet and Mother Nature is amazing and we need to do everything we can to respect and protect her.
So that's what Sustainability Advantage is doing. It's the New South Wales Government's business support program, and they partner with medium and large organizations and councils to help make businesses more competitive and sustainable.
A couple of ways they do that is by helping them work through strategies around sustainability, also looking at risks around compliance with respect to things like climate and carbon-related targets. They also help them identify opportunities for being more efficient with the resources that they use in their businesses, as well as addressing environmental and social issues in the supply chain, which is where we're going to focus today. And ultimately, it's about shifting business and organizational perspectives around environmental challenges and what's possible.
Where Sustainability Advantage comes in is, although the climate change and biodiversity emergencies do present enormous risks to businesses, there's also major opportunities to increase competitiveness and drive innovation while helping restore balance to nature. And this is really critical for the long-term sustainability and viability of organizations. So Sustainability Advantage under our Nature Positive pillar is all about aiming to increase the awareness of target setting, disclosing and supporting our members on their Nature Positive journey. In the last sort of 6 months, particularly, we've heard there's a lot more questions from our organizations about how do we start this process? What do we need to be aware of? How can we really take that first step to a nature positive journey? We have organizations who have gone through, like Blackmore is a bit of a pilot about setting science-based targets. We have another organization looking at a gap analysis for the Task Force for Nature-Related Financial Disclosures. So what are they missing and where do they need to start focusing their efforts now? We also have a number of other members starting some natural capital accounting projects, like the university, just trying to understand what is on their site and really very clear data, so science-based clear data, so they can really start making some decisions that will then take them on that journey towards SBTN or TNFD.
Okay, now that was a bit of an alphabet soup. Katie, can you unpack what Amy was talking about for our listeners?
Those are some acronyms for some really long title initiatives. SBTN is Science-Based Target Network, and TNFD is Task Force for Nature-Related Financial Disclosure. Basically, these initiatives are almost like a way to help give a voice to nature in a way that nature is now dictating or at least guiding the decision-making these days. Amy explains the process and the importance of these initiatives in more detail, particularly in terms of supply chains.
Science-Based Target Network, it's a collaboration of sort of global leading organizations who are working to help companies and cities to set targets for climate and nature. And the network really defines these targets as measurable, actionable, time-bound objectives based on the best available science and aligning to the Earth's limits and sustainability goals of society. They provide guidance for organizations, helping define sort of a clear pathway and ensuring they're doing a lot along their value chain or supply chain to address those impacts and dependencies on nature.
So it's kind of like a checklist for Mother Nature. And Amy ran us through a method for setting those targets, which is a five-step process.
First is really to assess, and that involves gathering data to estimate those value chain-wide impacts and dependencies. Second is to interpret the results and then prioritize key areas to look into. Third is about collecting proper baseline data to measure, set targets, and disclose those targets publicly so you share what they're doing with the world. Fourth is about acting, and that's where organizations make a plan to address those issues. And finally, it's about tracking and monitoring the progress towards those targets.
Basically, science-based targets, they provide a really easy way, or I guess like a clearly defined pathway for companies to reduce their greenhouse gas emissions and at the same time help future-proof their business growth.
Now that we've got that sorted, let's unpack the TNFD, or Task Force for Nature-Related Financial Disclosures.
It's like this risk management and disclosure framework that helps organizations report on their nature-related risks and really act on those. The framework is due to be released in September this year. It's gone through years of working with organizations around the world to try and sort of develop it and make it most easy, but also really robust for organizations to use. One of the key targets in there is that all organizations are going to start to need to assess and disclose their impacts and dependencies on nature. So although this isn't legislated now, this is coming. Like, there's a massive push for this internationally. So organizations need to start thinking about this and how their impacts and dependencies, you can set targets on it, for example, through the Science-Based Targets for Nature, and then be able to disclose that publicly through the Task Force for Nature-Related Financial Disclosure.
So it sounds like there's really a fair bit of transparency going on with this initiative, which is great. Are your members taking these ideas on board?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of organizations that we work with that are starting to really understand that they need to address something about nature. We identified an opportunity to pilot the first step of the Science-Based Targets for Nature with one of our ambitious members, Blackmores. And it really complemented some other work that Blackmores had already been doing, including sort of nature-related risk assessments and materiality assessments. So with the pilot that we did with Blackmores, it was really sort of following that first step to assess. So the pilot was really undertaken to provide the data on nature-related impacts and dependencies for one of their key supply chains and building the capacity in understanding and implementing those science-based targets for nature, which I think is really important for leadership in an organization to understand the reasons why this is important and showing that sort of impact of engaging with suppliers and actually trying to, you know, figure out what to do about it.
It's really interesting to hear what Amy and the team at Sustainability Advantage are trying to do, you know, really, I guess, help businesses to just better understand their role, their impact, and then how they can track it, monitor it, and try to improve things, you know, with a focus on the environment. And Blackmores sounds like a really interesting case study, right? Because they're a big company. We've probably all tried some of their product, you know, some sort of supplement. And the fact that they're also connected intrinsically with nature, right? Like, they use natural resources as part of their products. It sort of makes so much sense for them to track that supply chain.
Yeah. So due to their obvious and direct use of nature, as you mentioned, Blackmores have a really robust sustainability strategy, and it also includes a commitment to net zero emissions by 2030 and also working towards an ethical and sustainable supply chain. So I spoke with Sally Townsend, the sustainability manager at Blackmores, and she shared with us more about this.
I've been with Blackmores for more than 20 years. Much of that's been leading our group communications, which is really about telling our Blackmores story. And our passion for sustainability is one of the most unique parts of that story. And so in recent years, I've been able to be part of Blackmores taking the steps that we need to so that we can make sure that as we grow as a business, we're delivering on our vision for a world where people and nature thrive together. We're a 90-year-old business, and our founder, Maurice Blackmore, always instilled into our DNA that knowledge that you can't have healthy people without a healthy planet. And, you know, today that feels especially relevant given the global challenges that we're faced with. And we know that that twin challenge of climate change and biodiversity loss before all else are a health crisis. And that's what compels us as Blackmores to act.
Yes, we definitely have our fair share of challenges these days. So how does Blackmores supply chain address these global challenges and source ingredients without having a negative impact on the environment?
I'll give you a little bit of an overview of what our supply chain looks like, because we source about 900 ingredients from across about 36 countries. And that includes farmed and cultivated sources. It includes wild harvest. We source from different marine environments, and we're also a manufacturer. So to understand our supply chain, you really need to understand the origins of natural medicine. So even though we've got this really modern and evidence-based application of natural ingredients at the moment, they're from all over the world because they're influenced by traditional Chinese medicine and Ayurvedic medicine's Indian origins. We use ingredients like echinacea that have been used by Native Americans, or greenlit mussel extract. And greenlit mussels have been eaten by New Zealand's Maori populations for inflammation for generations. So for us as a supply chain, what that means is it's very global, and some of the ingredients that we use can only come from particular regions or climates, or are found in very narrow geographic ranges. I think that reflects that we're really uncompromising on quality, and we've always had really strong standards in place as far as, you know, we're using medical applications of ingredients. And so we've always had very strong governance in place to support the quality and the use of the extracts that we're using. But what it means for us now is that we need to be doing more work to make sure that we've got a really climate and nature resilient supply chain, because otherwise it's really vulnerable.
In regards to creating a more nature resilient supply chain, we spoke with Amy Croucher from Sustainability Advantage earlier. I know that you were working with them. Would you be able to tell us a little bit about the pilot study that you did with them?
The New South Wales Government Sustainability Advantage programs played a really key role in supporting our overall sustainability progress, especially the development of that net zero by 2030 commitment. And they really helped us to take the first steps to explore a key ingredient using science-based targets for nature as a framework. Insights from that work will come. Speed has been impacted by some data gaps. And even working through some approaches to get around those challenges in a credible way has given us some really rich learnings. Our most significant progress has been the completion of our first four nature risk assessments using the Task Force for Nature-Related Financial Disclosures LEAP framework. One of those was a key herbal ingredient, and that gave us some amazing insights that are going to help us assess other key ingredients and approaches to managing nature risks, but also to get us to the point where we're going to be able to value our dependency on nature. What we've learned is that we need to understand and value and protect ecosystem services. So the natural world provides us with all of these services that we need for free, basically, to run our business. It filters our air, it's involved in carbon abatement, it regulates our water supply, it gives us oxygen, it returns nutrients to the soil. And accessing all of those services from nature isn't something that in the future we'll be able to take for granted, because we're in this situation where there's so much pressure on our planetary resources, and then we're faced with unprecedented loss of species, and then we've got changes to the natural environment. What that means for business is that really puts a very strong responsibility on us to be sourcing sustainably. And for us, that means understanding natural capital as an asset to our business, and to protecting it the same way we would our financial capital or our manufactured capital or our human capital. So it's quite transformative in the way that a business would actually recognise and value and respect the role of nature beyond just access to ingredients that we use in our products.
Yeah, absolutely. Nature plays such an essential role in our everyday lives. And I guess that's why it's so important to be sourcing sustainably. As you mentioned, Blackmores has a very complex global supply chain with unique natural capital risk in every sourcing location. How do you manage these risks and ensure that sourcing the raw materials is sustainable and ethical?
So because we're making therapeutic goods, and that's meant that we've always been regulated by various governments, we've always had a requirement that certain natural extracts align to evidence bases, or there might be a clinical monograph, or there's lots of other different markers, even for therapeutic potency, that we're looking for. And that's meant that our quality program over the years has actually been a proxy for quite reasonable, sustainable sourcing. So it's meant that, for example, using things that might be threatened species isn't part of our ingredient base that we're using at the moment, which is a really good thing. But for us, I think moving forward, it's actually about understanding resilience at a deeper level. And earlier, when I was describing what our supply chain looks, and we're sourcing from very different geographies and very different natural environments, and each of those has very different requirements for what we're looking for. And we do impact a lot of communities through our supply chain, but that's also a great opportunity to make sure that we're conscious of the positive impacts that we can make, as well as taking responsibility for any dependencies and other impacts that we might have on the natural environment and on the people and communities where we source.
So how do you track and record these impacts when sourcing ingredients? It must be really challenging, to say the least. How does Blackmores, and I guess how can others ensure transparency and quality control in their supply chains?
Very important to that, I think, is the role that some of the emerging frameworks are playing. Things like science-based targets for nature, or Task Force for Nature-related financial disclosures, or accounting for nature. All of these are absolutely fundamental, because what they're doing is they're giving us a common language and they're giving us an agreed framework to move forward on all of those issues that you just raised. As importantly is the fact that they're inspiring a lot of collaboration across sectors and across industries. And I think that's as transformative as the actual work that they're producing. And one of the bits of advice that we're getting as a business community is to make sure that we're being encouraged to build on the work of others rather than duplicating that, because what we're trying to do is drive progress at scale.
In the pursuit of progressing at scale, there must be a huge amount of responsibility to ensure that nature is not sacrificed in the process. What is your view for the future, and how can companies find that balance between progress and environmental protection?
Where we're starting at the moment is to understand the baseline. So the first step for us to make really high quality disclosures and developing the right framework around this is going to be answering two clear questions, which is, what is our impact on nature and what is our dependency on nature? And then once we're starting to be in a position to actually understand where there's areas of vulnerability, that's where we're going to need to collaborate to say, what are some of the interventions that could be considered? So we've got to be careful that we're not in a position where we're risking either the therapeutic benefit or our amazing safety profile of our products while we're on the journey to make sure that we've got climate and nature resilient supply chain. It's a delicate balance, but again, the answers to that are making sure that we're developing this in a very sector-based approach, and that we've got a lot of diversity of thought that goes into the development of some of the things that you were mentioning earlier. So I think that's got to be where it's heading. But I think there's so much that we need to understand and be science-led to get to the point where we're making sure that where we're investing in change, that it's actually driving the outcome that's best for people, best for nature, and best for climate.
What are some of the challenges with implementing these new initiatives and investing in change?
Looking at the pilot that we did, it's not going to be feasible for us to replicate that another 900 times for every ingredient if we want to move it at pace. So the next step, as I said, is the development of that strategic materiality assessment so that we can be really intentional about how we prioritise and resource this program in the future. One of the biggest things I think that we're seeing is that access to data and setting the metrics that are going to deliver the right outcome are probably two of the biggest challenges that remain. But we're starting to work with people across the scientific and academic communities and to make sure that we're aggregating data and insights where we possibly can.
Due to the complexity of supply chains, accurate data collection and interpretation is extremely challenging to achieve ambitious sustainability goals. There are some digital technologies that are helping with the process, such as blockchain sensors, barcodes, tags, and other modern digital technologies. But Amy from Sustainability Advantage also agrees that lack of data is the biggest challenge when creating green supply chains.
There's a lot of data out there, but there's a lot more that's needed in this whole process, and organizations need to understand. Perfect data doesn't come quickly. You're not going to understand it straight off the bat. Like, there's probably a series of iterations which is necessary, which no doubt Blackmores is going through, which we've discovered through that pilot and some other organizations we're working with. That first go might sort of rely on incomplete or third-party data, but that's often enough to start prioritizing what parts of the organizations they really need to focus on because they have the biggest risks. And, you know, later iterations of it, it's probably more about collecting that primary data and beginning to really explore those risks. For example, different ecosystem management options. And I think with the supply chain, the biggest data challenge comes downstream supply chain, which is the hardest to obtain, particularly when a lot of organizations have suppliers overseas who in countries that speak different languages, and trying to get in touch with them and understand what's happening on the ground there is a real challenge. Which I guess leads to the other main challenge, which is supplier engagement. So I think engaging early with suppliers is really critical, and sort of bringing them on that journey with you so they can help down the line. First of all, with the data collection piece, but also so they can identify how they can collaborate with their suppliers to try and solve some of those trickier problems. There is a lot happening internationally in this space. There's this Data Catalyst project run by the Task Force for Nature-Related Financial Disclosure, which is trying to bring together a lot of the available data so it's a bit easier for organizations to use. But there's no sort of perfect, like with greenhouse gas emissions, it's very clear. You can understand that sort of metric greenhouse gas, but for nature, there's so many and it gets very complex. And I guess what the pilot with Blackmores really sort of identified is that, especially in a complex global supply chain, that data collection is really hard, but that is becoming easier. And I think the learnings from the pilot highlighted there's no better time to start, but now, even if you're starting on one small aspect of your supply chain, you can then take that learning, understand how you need to gather that data, what you need to do, how to engage the stakeholder in that avenue, and then start to expand that out.
Sally and Amy share some recommendations of what businesses can do to first understand their impact on and dependency on nature, and then how they can engage in behavior change that will reflect this understanding of putting nature first.
Currently, at a global level, we are all living outside of our planetary boundaries, so that we know that change is inevitable for all businesses, but we also know that the sooner that we start to change, the less impacted by that change will be. Ecosystems that have fewer biodiversity impacts and greater variation are more resilient to change. And I think if there's one thing we've all learned in the last few years is the necessity to be resilient to change. We know that nature-related impacts have a cascade effect on other natural systems. So for us, things like clearing of trees can affect water regulation. That can cause increased risk of flooding, which should be exacerbated by weather events because of climate change. That could affect soil quality, and that will directly affect our access to nutrients. So I think within every business, there is a strong connection to nature. It's just really important to be able to understand and articulate that. But that need to make sure that we are working in a way that protects nature so that we're less impacted by change that will be inevitable as well. But there's such a great spirit of collaboration at the moment, including leaders from the investment and sustainable finance communities. So there's opportunities there and across so many different sectors and industries. So it's a very important time for businesses to be part of those conversations.
For any organisation, you have to start the journey now, whether that be sort of reaching out and trying to find support for that education piece about what nature and natural capital even is, and then determining where your organisation interfaces with nature, even if it's selecting one piece of your supply chain or one site. And that can be challenging and time consuming, but no reason for inaction. Because I think the starting point for any nature-related target setting is inevitably the same, and that's really just looking at how dependent your organisation is on nature and what your impacts on nature are. And once you know that and understand that and can communicate that, then that can help set the game plan to mitigate any risks and also promote those nature positive solutions. I love working in this space, and it is so exciting how in the last couple of years nature has become so topical. I mean, it makes fundamental sense to how we live, how our organizations run. Like, everything about the world is nature. And I think there's been such a focus in previous years on getting to net zero, which is absolutely critical. But it's like almost underlying all of that is how we connect to nature and that how that can sort of support other sustainability objectives. Every day I'm learning something new in this space, and I love that we can support organizations to try and get that nature positive journey.
It's such exciting and interesting work, and I think it's so nice to be able to go home at the end of the day and find the work that you're doing interesting and rewarding. And I think so many people from across Batmores are really enjoying being part of this journey for that same reason.
This podcast has been produced by Grow Love Project with support from the New South Wales Government's Saving Our Species program. To hear more episodes, make sure to subscribe to this podcast. And for more info about the Saving Our Species program, visit savingourspecies.online/podcast. Thanks for listening.